Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life. Life Conversations, the radio show, is dedicated to empowering its listeners spiritually, emotionally, socially, and financially. The radio show provides the platform for the stimulation of thoughts, conversations, and ways of being that allow listeners to explore and examine what it is they believe and decide whether what they believe is keeping them stuck and disempowered or empowering them to live their best life.
Hello there. My name is Michelle Brown Stafford, child prodigy mom and parental involvement activist, urging parents to get involved in their children's education. At the age of 13, our son, Stephen Stafford, became the youngest ever to enroll as a full-time regular student in Morehouse College's 150-year history. This occurred only after well-meaning educators failed to identify our son's gifts in the classroom. Knowing who our son was, my husband and I got involved and prevented Stephen from falling through the educational cracks. So parents, get involved. Stay involved. Your child's potential is definitely worth it.
When I was young, I knew something was wrong. My mother would forget to pick me up from school.
Drugs and alcohol may make you forget your problems.
My mother got help, and because of recovery, she is here for me.
Hi, Mom.
You ready?
Let's go.
For drug and alcohol treatment for you or someone you love, call 1-800-662-HELP. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hello, this is motivational speaker Les Brown, and you're listening to Life Conversations. It's going to change your life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations Radio.
Giving a voice back to the community. 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 To the community.
Thank you.
Indeed, in the beginning was God, was the Word. What is the Word? What is the beginning? Where are we going? Ricky Byers-Beckwith reminding us that in the beginning, God, that's Genesis. That's called Genesis, in the beginning. Ricky Byers-Beckwith. Why is that important? If we're going forward and things look chaotic, maybe we need to say, where are we coming from? What's the point of this journey anyway? Maybe we need to ask ourselves some deep questions. In the beginning, where are you? What are you going through and growing through? What are you feeling right now? Are you moving forward harmoniously? Or there's so much chaos? Maybe you need to just stop and go back to the beginning. That's a thought. Now, that's a deep question. Well, we got the deep truth for you, so you can find your way, and we can all find our way. Ricky Byers-Beckwith, the Genesis. Good afternoon, good evening, good night, good morning, good day to you, wherever you may be at this very moment in time. Thank you for tuning into Life Conversations Radio, where change begins, and you make a difference. You make a difference simply because you exist, simply because you are here, because you are that place where God gets to see itself, get to experience itself. When people say, but where is God in all this chaotic world and all this recession? Well, you get to show up and say, God is right here, right now. You are the hands of God. You are the face of God. And if you're confused about that, go back to the beginning. Ask yourself, who am I? Why am I here? Well, we're here, Life Conversations Radio. You're listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on lifeconversationsradio.com. And we're here Monday to Thursday, 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, most of the time. And we've got some other information. But let's just move swiftly and go to my co-producer, Betty Begees, who is waiting in the wings. We've got to keep moving. Oh, before I go to Betty, for those of you, you already know, but just maybe there are two or three people who don't know about Ricky Byers-Beckwith. There might maybe one person on the planet, and something tells me that one person is listening. Ricky Byers-Beckwith's website is WeLetItBe.com, WeLetItBe.com, and you can also find her at AgapeLive.com, you know, that's this one person. I'm only talking to this one listener. Ricky Byers-Beckwith, of course, is married to Reverend Michael Bernard Beckwith. They're doing wonderful things. So, yeah, that one person knows. Now, you're in the know, and right now, let's give you some more information. Let me go to my co-producer. Hello, Betty Begees. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I am doing fantastic. Good morning, afternoon, and evening to all of you, wherever you are in this moment of now. My name is Betty, and each day I bring you the going ons, the coming ins, and the going outs of Life Conversations Radio. A brief reminder for those joining us in the chat room today, when wanting to ask a question to Life Coach Ade or our guest, please go to our Ask Life Coach Ade page on Facebook and post your question there. Now, I am on that page during the show, so I will immediately be able to see anything you post and get it back to Ade and our guest. Now, if you do not do Facebook, please go to our radio website, lifeconversationsmedia.com, click on the Ask Life Coach ID tab and send us your question or comment that way. Now, this is a great option to use if you're choosing to remain anonymous. Of course, the best way and easiest way to ask a question is to call in and punch 1 on your keypad. This will raise your hand and let me know you have a question or comment to make. Now, joining us tomorrow, we have Reverend Deborah Johnson, author of The Sacred Yes. She'll be discussing sacred sexuality, which is an essential part of our spiritual journey. And finally, make sure you're present each day with Celeste Morgan. We'll drop by for a celestial moment. Now, to learn more about Life Conversations Radio, its host, programming, upcoming guests, and more, please visit us at lifeconversationsmedia.com. To follow, like, and listen to any of our archived shows, please visit lifeconversationsradio.com. Life Coach Ade, take it away.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you. Yes. It's time to get this party rolling. Thank you, Betty. Lifeconversationsmedia.com is where you can find out all that's going on over here. And you're right here, right now. We welcome all of you listening in the chat room, on the phone line. Thank you all for spending your time with us, for hanging out on this playground called Life Conversations Radio. You know, what's your playground look like? Well, do you know who built the playground? What's the foundation of your playground? What's the foundation that you're standing on? Who really are you? And where did you get that answer from? Well, we're going to answer that for you today. Well, Greg Braden is. He's in the house. Let me tell you a little bit about him. There's so much I can share with you, but I'll just read a little bit about him. For more than 25 years, Greg has searched high mountain villages, remote monasteries, and forgotten texts to uncover their timeless secrets. His work is now featured on the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, the Sci-Fi Channel, and NBC. Today, Greg's work is published in 17 languages and 33 countries and shows us beyond any reasonable doubt that the key to our future lies in the wisdom of the past. So here's the thing, you know, we say there's no past, but there's something, there is a beginning. And until we're able to embrace the past and look at it, then we can move forward with clarity. And so, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, psychics and skeptics, physical beings and non-physical beings, help me welcome my wonderful guest. Oh, wait. I need to do something. I get carried away. No, I get focused. I don't get carried away. Stop using your words against yourself like that. I was just focusing what I was doing. Help me welcome my wonderful guest, Greg Braden. Come on, people. All this excitement. Okay, calm down. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to Ade and Betty and all of our listeners. I am so thrilled to be on your program today, and I'm so happy to be with you and all of our listeners all over the world. And as we mentioned a little earlier, my sense is I think our time together is going to go by very, very quickly here because we have so much that we can share together today.
Yes, so much, and I have so many questions, and I said, listen, you only have an hour, narrow it down. But I trust the process of life, and so we're going to keep moving. I just read a little bit about you, but I want to ask you from your point of view, from your perspective, who are you? Who is Greg Braden?
You know, you're going to start with the easy questions first, I see.
Yes, let's get that out of the way so we can get to the real heavy questions.
I am a spiritual being having a physical experience here in this world, and my greatest joy comes from sharing in venues just like we have today what I sense is the deepest truths of our existence, sharing it from my heart. to the hearts of all of our listeners so that we can have that information in our minds to help guide us with our hearts through the great crises and challenges of our world and our time today.
Yes. We talk about what we're dealing with and what we're going through right now. I've always said, you know, I don't understand why religious folks and spiritual folks and scientists can't get together and just add value to life. But sometimes there seems to be a divide, and that's what you bring. You bridge that both with science and spirituality. In your book, The Deep Truth, I mean, you emphasize the challenges that we're going through right now and what we must do. But one of the questions that you ask, which is very close to my heart because it's a simple question that I ask you, you emphasize the importance of asking ourselves, who are we? And asking that question as an individual, as families, as nations, as a combined human civilization. Can you tell us more about that and the importance of asking ourselves, who are we?
Absolutely. And it's a great place to begin today. Because I'm going to back up about a half a step, and you mentioned that we're living some difficult times today, and I want our listeners to know it's not just our imagination, and it's not just the New Age community or the New Thought community or the spiritual community or the religious community. The best minds of our time are telling us in no uncertain terms that right now, this generation, these years, together as a family in this world, we are living the greatest crises, the greatest number of crises ever to face a single generation in 5,000 years of recorded history. And they say never has one generation had to face and solve so many different problems in such a short period of time. And some of the problems I'm sure our listeners are familiar with, we all know we're learning to deal with climate change and what that means in our lives. We're dealing with the diminishing resources that every human on this earth needs to survive, things like fresh water and abundant food. We're dealing with this growing disparity between wealth and poverty, with this growing disparity between education and illiteracy, new diseases that we have no medical cure for, the threat of war looming on the horizon in the Middle East. And these are just some of the crises that the experts are telling us. The 7 billion people that we now share our world with, all needing those diminishing resources. How do we serve our global family? So when I began to understand that, in fact, this is a unique time, it's not like any other time, business as usual, what I also began to understand as I looked at the crises is, how did we get to this place where all of a sudden it seems like we've got so many, the economic collapse. How did these things happen seemingly so suddenly in our lives? And what I began to understand is that the things that are presenting the challenges to us today, the crises, are the result of a way of living based upon a way of thinking that has been perpetuated for several hundred years. And as I began to recognize this, my big question now is the question that you asked: where did we get this way of thinking, and what the studies showed, and where I found myself going with this, is that we tend to solve our problems, we tend to build the systems of life based upon the way we think of ourselves and our relationship to the world. So for many people, the question, who am I as an individual, or who are we as a community, or as a nation, or as a planet, it sounds like a very, very simple question. And some people discount the answer. They say, well, you know, let's get to the real stuff here. And the point of this book is that this is the real stuff, because the world that we have built, the systems that sustain us, and the ones that are breaking down, and the way we solve our problems are all based upon our answer, how we answer that single question. Every crisis that crosses our paths as individuals or as nations or as a world, every decision that we will ever make, every choice that we will ever face, the answer, the way we answer this question, is the lens through which we will make those choices and those decisions. It's the lens through which our leaders will make the policies and the laws that affect all of our lives. So from my perspective, I don't know what could be more important than answering the question, who are we? And where this is particularly interesting to me, I was trained as a scientist, and I think science is good. I think our lives are definitely better because of science in some respects. But I also know that science does not have all the answers, and that there are these glaring gaps and these huge inconsistencies in the way that science has led us to think of ourselves and our world. And the book Deep Truth is about the new discoveries that overturn 300 years of scientific thinking, the new discoveries that show us where our thinking was in error and where those erroneous ways of thinking, how those have led to many of the crises that we're facing today, including the collapse of the global economic system that I'd like to talk about before we finish our hour. So,
sure.
So that's a long answer to a short question, but it lays the foundation for everything that we'll talk about in this hour.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And you know, you talk about erroneous thinking, over 300 years of erroneous thinking. Can you speak to some of those right now that, you know, that we can maybe possibly identify with?
Absolutely. We and when I say we, I'm talking largely about we and what is considered to be the modern Western world. The civilization that we have come to depend upon and rely upon, so many of those things are not working anymore. It's the breakdown of the economic system, for example, or of the way that we fuel our homes, the way that we grow and share and distribute our food and our medicine and how we share our technology.
Mm-hmm.
The way that we choose to do those things is largely based upon the scientific answers that address the question, who are we? So I'm just going to begin that the title of the new book is called Deep Truth. And for many people, that's a very presumptuous title because the word truth
right.
itself means different things to different people. So I'd like people to know, our listeners know, where this came from. The title actually comes from a conversation that the physicist, the eminent 20th century physicist Niels Bohr, was having in a conversation with Albert Einstein in the 1940s. And these two great men were talking about the nature of truth, and in this case, scientific truth. And what Niels Bohr said, I'm just going to share, it was a one sentence, a direct quote. He said, quote, "It is the hallmark of any deep truth that its negation is also a deep truth," end of quote. So in other words, what he was saying is when we build our lives and our world upon scientific principles that we believe are true at one point in time, and when new discoveries then tell us that those are no longer true, the new discoveries themselves become the new deep truths. This is where we find ourselves in the world today. The crises, the systems that are breaking down in the world around us are breaking down because they're based on unsustainable ways of thinking that stem from false assumptions that science has made in the past and that you and myself and our listeners, we've been led to believe are the deepest truths of our world and our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like to do, and answer your question, I'd like to identify five key false assumptions. And then we can zero in on a couple of these and the new discoveries that tell us that they're false. So does that sound like a good way to go from this
point? It sounds just the perfect way to go.
So when I was in school back in the 1960s and 70s, and many of our listeners, when they were in school, and if they have young people in school today, I'm going to share five assumptions that I was taught, that our listeners were taught, that young people are being taught. Every one of these assumptions is now proven to be scientifically false. New discoveries are telling us that these assumptions are false on the one hand, and on the other hand, they are still being taught in our public schools, and there is a reluctance, in some cases, there's a resistance to sharing the new discoveries in our mainstream media, mainstream television, mainstream classrooms, mainstream textbooks. For a lot of reasons, there is a resistance to sharing these new discoveries. So what I'd like to do, I'm going to just list the five false assumptions, and then we're going to zero in on a couple of those.
Okay.
So the first false assumption is from Charles Darwin, and it is about evolution. And what's being taught today is that evolution explains life in general, and it explains human life specifically. And the problem is that the new discoveries simply do not support that false assumption, number one. Number two, the assumption that civilization itself is only about 5,000 or maybe 5,500 years old, that civilization began about 5,000 years ago in a primitive state. It advanced at one time only in a linear fashion to the sophistication that we have today. Again, the new discoveries simply do not support this. Number three is that consciousness is somehow separate from our physical world. This assumption has written humankind right out of the equation of the unified field theory. This is one of the reasons scientists cannot find this unified field theory, because they've written consciousness out of the equations themselves, and the new discoveries do not support this assumption.
Mm-hmm.
False assumption number four is that the space between physical things is empty. So the space between you and the person next to you in the room, or the space between the nucleus of an atom and that first electron, just because we don't see anything there doesn't mean that it's empty. But this is the assumption that science has made for nearly 300 years. And false assumption number five, it's the last on this list, but it may be the most critical in terms of our lives. And I'm going to talk about it a little bit more, is another assumption from Charles Darwin. And the assumption, and this Darwin's own words, the assumption is that nature is based upon the model of survival of the strongest. Survival of the strongest. This single assumption that was made in 1859, I believe, is the foundation of so many of the crises that we're living in our lives today. Because that assumption that nature is based upon survival of the strongest is so deeply ingrained into our civilization. It's the model that corporations are based upon.
Yes.
It's the model that the economic system that's collapsing in the world right now is based upon. It's the model that our young people are conditioned in school to follow, this belief that nature is based upon survival of the strongest. It's less about the excellence of the education and more about getting the right answer and being the best in the class.
Mm-hmm.
How we solve our problems, so much of how we solve our problems is based on this. So these are the five false assumptions. And if it makes sense, what I'd like to do is start with that number five. Develop
yes,
that idea a little
that
bit.
Makes a lot of sense, because that's where I wanted to go, especially when I think of it. If nature is based on survival of the strongest, and I look at the model we have, it's mainly about competition rather than cooperation. So, yeah, that's a good place for us to. So just go ahead and do your thing.
Well, what you just said just now is absolutely the key. This is the key. So I'm just going to begin a little bit. Most of our listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with the name Charles Darwin. But many listeners may not be familiar with precisely what it is that he offered, or why it would be so important in our lives today when he offered his ideas in the mid-1800s. So I'll just begin by saying Charles Darwin was a scientist. And I'm not down on Charles Darwin personally. I think he was probably a good scientist. And he was living in another time. It was another world in 1859. Up until the time that Darwin released his first book, it was titled On the Origin of Species. Up until that time, the big answers to the questions of life were not answered by scientists. They were answered by the church and spiritual and religious communities. So up until 1859, the answer to the question, who are we, was done in a non-scientific manner. 1859, Charles Darwin published his book, and he made the first attempt to scientifically answer the questions. Now, in my opinion, this is where Charles Darwin made a mistake. This is where he went wrong. Darwin made observations in nature. So he took a long voyage and visited remote tropical islands, and he observed plants and insects and animals, and he took the observations that he made for some forms of life in one part of the world in that moment in time, and he tried to generalize those observations to apply to all life everywhere for all time, including humans. And the problem is that the data doesn't support it. So one of the observations that Darwin made, he believed that when he saw insects or animals behaving in nature in one place, that he was witnessing examples of a general law that applies to all life. So when he would see two birds in a nest that were siblings, and another bird would come in that was different from those two, they would immediately kick that bird out of the nest just because it was different, and they would leave it to die. Or when he saw ants making slaves of other ants because they were bigger and stronger, Darwin saw that as a small example in the insect kingdom of this general law. So I'm just going to share Darwin's exact words, and this is a quote from his book. He said when he sees those laws, he said what he believes he was seeing are examples of one general law leading to the advancement of all beings. And that law is multiply, vary, let the strongest live and the weakest die. Let the strongest live and the weakest die. This is a very, very dangerous way of thinking. And when I share this with live audiences, you know, people respond to me in the audience, and they say, okay, Greg, you know, we know this isn't a good way to think. But Darwin wrote this book in 1859. What difference could it possibly make in our lives today? And the answer is because it was the first scientific attempt to explain us and our relationship to the world, it was embraced quickly throughout the world, and it became deeply entrenched in the way we think, consciously and subconsciously. Let the strongest live and the weakest die. And if we think about our world and our civilization since 1859, the way that we solve our problems in the world through the use of warfare, the way that our corporations are built, they're built to do what's good for money rather than to do what's good for people. And
right.
The big example of that is on a global basis. The economic system is built to serve itself rather than to serve individuals. So if we want to see the consequences of where this dangerous thinking can lead, we need look no further than some of the great crises of our world today. The war that is looming on the horizon in the Middle East, that's completely preventable if we can think differently, but it may not be preventable if we believe it's survival of the strongest. The
right.
economic system that is collapsing because we have pushed this way of thinking to the limit. And some of the greatest atrocities of human against human in the 20th century were actually justified in this Darwinian thinking. Adolf Hitler, for example, paraphrased Darwin's words. He didn't even give Darwin credit, but he paraphrased the ideas to justify the elimination of individuals and populations that he felt were the weakest, survival of the strongest. Chairman Mao actually quoted Charles Darwin, and Chairman Mao said that because these are scientific principles, it justifies the elimination of entire populations based on survival of the strongest and his interpretation of what that meant. So, and it's still happening in the 21st century. We know that this kind of thinking is perpetuated in some parts of the world in the 20th century. So while I don't want to dwell on that, I want our listeners to understand just because it's an old idea doesn't mean that it doesn't affect us today.
Right.
Very, very deeply is this subconsciously and consciously in some cases. It's entrenched.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the good news. I want to get to the good news quickly.
Actually, before you get to the good news, let's take a quick break.
Sure.
And then we'll talk about the good news, because in your book you also talk about that we're wired for peace. So I want you to tie all of that together when we come back.
Absolutely.
And we've got some questions for you as well. You're listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on LifeConversationsRadio.com. The number is 347-426-3346. If you've got questions, you better call in now, because I got loads and I'm going to ask it all. Well, maybe not. But anyway, we're going to take a break. We're taking your questions on Ask Life Coach Ade fan page on Facebook. Ask Life Coach ADE fan page on Facebook. Or we're taking your calls 347-426-3346, 347-426-3346, and make sure you press one on your keypad, and we will come to you, and we will be right back after this.
I am great, I am wonderful, I am whole, I am peace, I am here, I am strong, I'm free. Well, I'm the delight of God, I am you. I am healed, I am love, I am great, I am wonderful, I am whole, and I am free.
Hello, this is motivational speaker Les Brown, and you're listening to Life Conversations. It's going to change your life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Snickerdoodle, shortbread, fudgy nut bar. How many cheeks? Snickerdoodle, shortbread, fudgy nut bar. How many cheeks in the cookie jar? One.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Life Conversations works with people to increase their organizational and individual potential by assisting them in identifying habits, attitudes, beliefs, and expectations that hinder their performance professionally and socially. Life Conversations is committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be.
Yes, indeed. Where do you want to be? Where are you? When you get clear about who you are, you will have the answers to that. Our guest today is Greg Braden. His website address is that, his name, gregbraden.com. Find out more about him. He's well known, but if there's one or two people who don't know him, and if you do, you can still read more about him. His latest book is The Deep Truth, and he shares a lot more about what we're talking about here, the shift, the changes that we're going through, and the answers, not just from a new age perspective or spiritual perspective, from a scientific perspective, which actually is a masculine energy. And we need to balance both the masculine and the feminine so we can give birth to new ideas. We're taking your calls. We want to continue the conversation about what's happening and what's happening right now, and the good news that it was, as we were sharing before the break. So, Greg, let's talk about the good news.
Well, absolutely. You know, what you spoke just now so perfectly illustrates why the scientific perspective is so important. When I have taken the time to visit some of the most remote and isolated and pristine and ancient sites remaining in the world today, and I communicate with the people that live in these places, in the monasteries of Tibet or the monasteries of the Sinai Desert in Egypt or in Bolivia and Peru, all through India and through Nepal and the American desert southwest of this great continent we live on. The indigenous people of the world don't need the science. They do not need the scientific perspective to tell them what it is that we're sharing here today, because they sense it in their hearts and they live that way. And I know for many of our listeners, that's true for them as well. We don't always need the scientific perspective because we sense, we know in our hearts the truest nature of our existence. But here's where the science comes in. We live in a very interdependent world, and much of that world right now is run essentially by corporations and by industry based in the ideas of science. And if we truly choose to bring about the kind of change on the level, on the scale that we're talking about on a global scale, it's important for those who are making the decisions and the policies and passing the laws that affect all of our lives to at least be aware of the new discoveries. Once they are aware of those discoveries, then they have to make a choice as to whether or not they embrace them or not. And my having worked in the corporations, my experience has been that the corporations are based upon old ideas that are very well entrenched in their way of thinking. But now that those ideas are breaking down, the ideas of the way we run a global economy, the way we run business, the old ideas have always told us that war, for example, is good for the economy. Well, what the new studies now are showing, what the science is showing, is that peace is a viable economy and actually benefits everyone even more than a wartime economy. That is a very different way of thinking, but the science supports it. So what I'm going to share is the good news. These are peer-reviewed scientific discoveries. It's not speculation. It's not my opinion. It's not a new thought or a new age idea. This is based in solid science. In the late 1990s and the early 2000s, over 400 peer-reviewed studies were published in answer to a single question, Ade. And the question was simply this: what is the optimum amount of competition in any given situation? Now, I know as a life coach, this applies to our personal everyday lives. It applies to our family. It applies to our communities. And now it applies to a world made of nations that are doing their very best in uncharted territory of great crises. The single principle, the optimum amount of competition. And when they talk about competition, it's not like a friendly game of checkers or a game of soccer. This is violent competition. And the answer might surprise some of our listeners. But the answer, I'm just going to share the direct quote. It said, quote, "The ideal amount of competition in any environment, in the classroom, in the workplace, in the family, in the playing field, is none. Competition is always destructive," end of quote. And this is from a book. It was published by Alfie Kahn. The title of the book is called No Contest, The Case Against Competition. But it has been followed in very prestigious journals such as New Scientist, April 2008. This is a direct quote from an article by a scientist. His name is Michael LePage. And this is in direct conflict with what we have been led to believe that Charles Darwin observed.
But let me ask you this.
Let me share the quote. The quote is, "What we see in the wild is not every animal for itself. That cooperation is an incredibly successful survival strategy. When cooperation breaks down, the results can be disastrous," end of quote. So this is the scientific community saying that cooperation is the model that nature is based upon, not competition. And while we may see competition from time to time, it's in response to specific circumstances. It's not the truest nature. So I just wanted to complete that thought because I think it's key to this whole conversation, Ade.
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, I just think of the statement, competition is always destructive. And, I mean, that's what we see everywhere. And I really also want to, I mean, we've got our listeners got questions, but I also want to ask you, just staying with competition is always destructive. When one is starting a business, we're always encouraged to look at our competition. For me, that's always been something that didn't feel right for me. It's like, nobody can compete with me. I'm unique. But in the business world, we're told to check out what our competitors are doing and find out what it, I mean, what can we do individually to usher in this new way of thinking and releasing? Because, as you said earlier, some of these thoughts are part of, it's almost like it's part of our DNA, it's part of our subconscious mind. How can we start to change that, moving from competition to cooperation?
You know, it's such a good question, and it's, the answer is so subtle, but there is a subtle difference and a powerful difference in us as individuals between us working toward our own personal excellence, being the best that we can be, and working from that perspective, rather than looking at the people around us and trying to find out where their weaknesses are and capitalize on their weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the easiest way to think about this, and maybe this is for me a lot of what this 2012 year is all about. So many people have asked me, you know, my perspective of the world that's collapsing and so many people having a hard time and what should we do. Maybe it's as simple as this, Ade. It's the subtle shift of changing the way we think from asking the question, what can I get from the world that exists, to asking the new question, what can I offer to the world that's emerging? And I think when we make that subtle shift, it opens the doors to the possibilities of us sharing uniquely our gifts rather than trying to compete and tear down those of other people that surround us.
I love that. What can I offer to the world that exists?
What can I offer to the world that's emerging rather than what can I get from the world that exists?
The world that's emerging. That is so simple. Is there a way we can slow down time? You're a scientist. Is there a way we can put time on hold so we can get to some of these other questions?
I'll do my best to answer as many as we can. But
okay, great.
Yeah.
So let me run to a listener real quick. Well, let me get a listener's online. She's got a question. Rebecca, from your neck of the woods, New Mexico. So let's go to Rebecca. Rebecca, what's your question?
Hi, Greg. Hi, Ade. Thank you very much for taking the call.
Hi, and, Rebecca. It sounds like you're my neighbor. I'm calling you from Santa Fe, New Mexico today.
Oh, my goodness. Well, actually, I was supposed to drive up there today, but I might actually do that on Friday instead. Because I'm doing this and taking notes, I can't be driving and doing sales at the same time right now.
No, you don't want to write and drive at the same time. But I'll do my best to answer your question.
I know. Well, I love your Facebook post, by the way, and I thought one I wanted to ask, are the five assumptions within, is that your latest book?
The latest book is called The Deep Truth, Igniting the Memory of Our Origin, History, Destiny, and Fate.
Well, from my, what the first popped into my head, hearing you talk about them, because I have a great education, and you're right, a lot of people still go by that, those assumptions, and I thought this would be such a great teen seminar kind of workshop program kind of thing, and I thought, well, would you think that would be a good idea, because I teach a lot of teens usually, and I thought, well, what a great study, you know, a book group, kind of review the book, so I wasn't sure what you thought of that,
Let me put it this way, and I wanted to follow up. I'm glad you brought this up. I mentioned earlier in the program, there's a resistance in the mainstream to share these new science-based, peer-reviewed discoveries. In some cases, there's an outright there's a reluctance. In some cases, it is an outright resistance. What I wanted to say is it's not the teacher's fault. And I know we have a worldwide audience here, but in the United States, the curricula for the classroom is determined generally by the state and the school board within the state. In each of the 50 states, there are so many different curricula, different perspectives. So while many teachers have come out of the woodwork wanting to share this in the classroom, what they're finding is that there is, again, the reluctance or in some cases the resistance, and especially when it comes to evolution, when it comes to some of the physics and the ideas of competition, they're not allowed to share this in the classroom. So it's not the teacher's fault. And the book is designed to as a study guide, broken down into sections for study groups and for classroom, and there are some new multimedia programs, DVDs, that will become available this year that can be shared in the classroom if that's the way you'd like to go. So I want to thank you for the work you do.
Well, I'm thinking more of the spiritual centers. You know, there's quite a few, actually, and we're very lucky in this area to have quite a few centers for spiritual living. So that's what I was thinking more along the lines. And never blame the teacher. Absolutely. I agree with you. I have so many wonderful master teachers. It's fantastic. They really do want to be more accurate. So I agree with you on that. Thank you again. I appreciate all your help.
All right.
Thanks
so much.
Rebecca.
Take care.
Thank you so much. Let's go quickly to Donna. Hey, Donna, what's your question?
Okay. He brought up a point before. You spoke about Greg, about the corporate world and how they're not integrating these new principles of a new way, what's coming up of doing business. This is like so pertinent because I was in a corporate meeting all day yesterday, and I got out of the meeting and I just felt like I wasted like a whole day, part of my day time. And I brought up, I was bold enough to bring up in the meeting and express what I felt. I said, you know, we're having these meetings, but I feel that we walk in and we walk out more tired, mm-hmm. and we need to be working on team building in a different way. And I'm in sales, so, you know, I mean, sales can be an art, but there's also a new way, I think, to bring in. What is the new way? How can I be the catalyst of this change? How can I show up in that
way? Well, the answer to the question is probably more than I can do justice to in a few seconds on a phone call. I do address it in the book Deep Truth. But I want to say I come from the corporate world. I was the first technical operations manager at Cisco Systems in 1990. I was a senior computer systems designer at Martin Marietta Defense during the last years of the Cold War. I worked at Phillips Petroleum in the mid-late 70s. And in every one of these corporations, all Fortune 500 corporations, it is so deeply entrenched, this old model of competition at any cost. And what I found is in the boardroom, I was the youngest person in the boardroom in all three of these corporations. And what I found is if you walk in and say to the people in that boardroom, hey, let's try something different, there is an immediate resistance to doing that. However, what I found was if I or people around me began applying these understandings in the way that we dealt with the problems, if we began solving problems cooperatively in a boardroom, you don't have to announce that you're going to do it. If you just begin to approach the problems with these new ways of thinking, this very interesting phenomenon happens in that other people will tend to mimic subconsciously or sometimes consciously, they begin to mimic these new behaviors in the boardroom, and you don't have that resistance. So I think it's about living and applying in everyday situations what you find to be true in your heart, but you don't have to announce that you're going to do it, because that is often what triggers the resistance.
I like that. You got to live your truth, because one of the things that you talked about, the deep truth, space between physical, consciousness separate from the physical world. So when we live our truth, we start to create a new way of living. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, many of the topics, these five false assumptions, they are all separate from one another, but they are all woven together into a perspective that we in the modern world are asked to think of ourselves through. Many of these ideas, they're going to come up. This is 2012, is an election year for the United States. Some of these ideas about evolution, about climate change, about the way we deal and adapt and help one another to deal with this natural cycle of climate change, these are going to be hot topics in the election cycle. And it's interesting to hear in the debates how the people that are asking us to trust them will deal with some of the great crises that face us. And if they're open to embracing the new discoveries, or if they're asking us to go back to a world that no longer exists, the world of the past is gone. And we are now living the consequences of a long learning curve. And I'm not saying it's right, wrong, good, or bad. I'm saying that we are all on this learning curve to discover what works and what doesn't. And the things that don't work, we should stop doing them. And the things that do work, let's do a lot of them in cooperation. We have only a few minutes left, but what I wanted to say is this. Number two on our list of false assumptions was about civilization itself, and I'm going to make a long story very brief. The bottom line is that new discoveries, peer-reviewed scientific discoveries, not speculation, are now pushing the date of advanced civilizations back into the last ice age, over twice as old as what we've been led to believe is the age of civilization. And here's the reason it's important. Rather than civilization being only 5,000 years old, the dates are now going back 12, 13,000 years before the present. But here's the key that ties those discoveries into what we're saying about competition. In all of the archaeological sites that have been found, whether it's in India or South America or Egypt or Turkey, these sites that are older than 5,000 years, there is no evidence, Ade, of any weapons, no evidence of any large-scale warfare, no evidence of walls protecting the homes and the cities or moats that protect the dwellings. There's no evidence of mass graves and mutilated bodies from large-scale war. All of that appears to have begun 5,000 years ago, the time that we say that history began. And now as we understand that there's a cycle that existed before ours that did not turn to warfare to solve their problems, it is another piece of evidence that strongly suggests that competition, while we can do it, that competition is not the model of nature. It's not our truest nature. That war may be a very bad habit that we learned about 5,000 years ago, and if it is a habit that was learned, then it's a habit that we can unlearn, and I believe that is the great opportunity of this generation as we move forward solving the crises of our time today.
Before you go, can you speak briefly about the global financial situation, as you wanted to mention, is that really what's going on and what we can take from it individually and collectively?
Well, I think we have inadvertently, we have addressed it through everything we've talked about here. What we're seeing is the consequence of a way of thinking carried to an extreme. And for those who are working to get back to where we were, I think they're going to be very frustrated because that world is gone. The way that we've thought about money, finances, jobs, careers, and industry in the past was unsustainable. That's the key. It was unsustainable. And those that are trying to get that back are the ones that are having a lot of problems, a lot of frustration on the one hand. On the other hand, if we recognize that that world served us, it now no longer works because it was unsustainable. And we can see that it opens the door to an unprecedented array of new opportunities, new ways of doing business based upon cooperation, upon sustainable ways of working together rather than competing with one another, to share the disappearing resources like food and water, to work together to adapt to the natural cycle of climate change rather than blaming and pointing fingers at one another, trying to blame one nation or another for creating it. The science simply does not support that, and I talk about that in the book. So I've never been more optimistic or felt better about the world before us simply because it is so clear now that the world that we created, many of the things are not sustainable. They no longer work. That opens the door to the new opportunities, and this is where we stand today. So as we solve the crises of our time, if we solve them through the old ways of thinking and the false assumptions, we know where that leads because we're living it right now. So my invitation to our listeners is, in our everyday lives, if we can embrace these new principles, and specifically this principle of cooperation rather than competition, let's see where that world leads us. And I think I'll come back and we'll have this conversation a year from now, and I think we'll be looking in a very different world, Eddie.
Yes, 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 yes. Wow, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for what you do and your commitment, your passion to bridging spirituality and science so we could see the bigger picture and recognize that we are all one. We truly, truly appreciate you for spending time with us today.
I want to just take a moment. This time went very quickly, and I do have another interview coming in just about 3 minutes, but I want to acknowledge you. I want to thank you for your vision and your dedication in creating the media and the forum so that we can have these kinds of conversations and share these new ideas with everyday people that are going about their lives, doing their very best to make this a better world and become better people, because this is where the change really begins. So Betty and Ade, thank you so much for inviting me on the program today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. Thank you very much, Greg Braden. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Life is good, it's getting better. That was Greg Braden. His website address is that. His name, Greg, that's G-R-E-G-G Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N. Check him out, get the book, Deep Truth. There's so much in there. Sometimes there are those of us in the spiritual community say, we can't deal with this scientific stuff, but we need both. We need it all. It all works together. And I love, you know, just think about it. When you're competing with family members, with yourself, with neighbors, competition is always destructive. That's one thing I'm going to take with me. There's so much. But if we can just remember, we're seeing it. The great thing about it is right now, everything that was built on the false assumption is crumbling. Now, the question for you listeners, for me, for us all, is, are we going to be part of the change, or are we going to crumble with the old? We have a choice. We got to step up. We got to live from the heart. We got to live. And there's the other thing, the question that Greg encouraged us to ask is, what can I offer to the world that is emerging? What can you offer? On Monday, I talked about love giving and receiving. What can you offer? What do you have to give to this new world that's emerging? What do you have to give? Not what can you get? Well, I'm going to get mine. I'm going to get mine. No, what do you have to give? That's the answer. That's the answer. So don't panic. Just go within and find out what you have to give. What do you have to offer? How can you contribute to what's going on? Well, Celeste Morgan has a lot to share with us. She has a lot to give. And what we do here is really about expanding consciousness, from going beyond to looking at life from different points of view, because that's all it is. And rather than waste time criticizing the leaders, the politicians, and what they're doing or not doing, let's just focus on what we have to give. Now it's time for Celestial Moment with Celeste Morgan. And let me bring her in right here. Where is she? Where's Celeste? Celeste is right here. Hey, Celeste, how are you doing?
Great. It was wonderful listening to Greg today. Thank you so much for that.
And, You're very welcome.
Really? I got a lot out of it, so thank you. Anyway, hello, family. Good afternoon. My name is Celeste Morgan, and it is my pleasure to bring you Celestial Moment. I come bearing a number gift. Numbers give us more information about ourselves to navigate our path and embrace whatever is showing up in our life right now. It's Wednesday. Today's date is January 18, 2012. Add January 18, 2012, and you get 2031. Add 2031, and it equals 6. So we already know that 6 is lovers in Mother Peace Tarot and the snake in medicine cards. Now imagine marrying the energy of 6 with the feminine power of cups. The picture that emerges is one of excitement and a release from emotional limitations. We are talking about the truth of freedom. Love is freedom, which we see in the 6 of cups. This card features 6 nude women riding on seahorses and horses in the ocean. Seahorses are good luck, and horses represent physical and unearthly power. The ocean symbolizes infinite possibilities, and a cresting wave represents high vibrations and joy in motion as the sun's rays touches all of us indiscriminately. The truth is,
We can't tap power being fake or hiding. So no clothes in tarot means you are free to show who you are. The writers are holding their cups for receiving in a salute of gratitude while snakes spiral out, reminding to let go and access our inner fire. This is a sacred celebratory ride. We don't know where these writers are going, but I can assure you they will be a blessing to whoever they meet. For the gateways to power are knowing and loving thyself, and we do. Our tools are compassion, caring, teaching, loving, and sharing our gifts, abilities, and talents. Let's continue to embody the energy of our writers today and make a difference in the world by giving ourselves away. And that's the story of six through Mother Peace Tarot and the elemental power of water. All is well. I'll see you on Thursday around 1 for another celestial moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Celeste, and my apologies. We didn't get to your questions. We're trying to squeeze as much in, but I know all is well. We're going to take a quick break, and I want to address some of the comments in the chat room. Daisy and Gozi, I want to talk about that. He's talking about the earth will destroy human life. We are a problem. Well, it sounds to me that you believe that consciousness is separate from physical world. I've got something to say about that. Just a little something, because that's not the truth. That's a false assumption. And that truth is your truth is crumbling. We're taking your calls. Anything you want to add, share, ask, 347-426-3346. You are listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on lifeconversationsradio.com. We are here Monday to Thursday, 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern. I can't even say that without even smiling or laughing. But anyway, we're going to take a very quick break. Breathe it all in. And, you know, we've had this, we've listened. Some of us have shifted in consciousness. We may be debating a thought, an idea. Let's take this next few moments to just embody what resonates with us. You know, by asking yourself, someone in the chat room said, the only thing you can give to life is death. What does that mean? I mean, it sounds deep, but really, what does that mean? Come on, you are life. I'll be back. I'll take a break. 347-426-3346, 347-426-3346, and press 1 on your keypad, and we'll take your calls, and we're also taking your questions on Ask Life Coach Ade fan page on Facebook.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life. Life Conversations, committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Have courage, make that move.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Let me try.
Okay, just remember what I showed you.
Yep, there was a bunny who had one big ear and another big ear. They looped-a-looped, made a bow, and the bunny hopped away. I did it!
Oh, good job, kiddo. Now let's tie your other shoe.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you don't need to talk to me about sex.
Maybe you do control what I'm exposed to.
But maybe not.
Maybe I hear about sex every day.
In the media, from my friends.
Maybe while you're not talking to me about sex, everyone else is.
So talk to me. Tell me to wait to have sex.
Because you can influence me.
For help starting the conversation, visit forparents.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and this station.
Life Conversations works with people to increase their organizational and individual potential by assisting them in identifying habits, attitudes, beliefs, and expectations that hinder their performance professionally and socially. Life Conversations is committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be.
Life Conversations Radio.
Giving a voice back to the community. To the community. To the community. To the community. To
yes,
the
indeed.
Community.
Life Conversations Radio, activating your throat chakra. Giving a voice back to the community. Helping you express your expression. Express your voice. Share your thoughts. What do you have to give? What do you have to share with the world? We're all part of this. There's no separation. Let's see here. I've got to go to my... Oh, okay. Well, I'm still going to address it. We had someone in the chat room said something, the earth will destroy human life, we're a problem. And that, you know, I'm just not even going to waste my time talking about that. It's just not necessary. It's absolutely not point. Let me look for other comments here. Tamara Angel said, it doesn't ever do any good to point fingers, but I've absolutely seen change when the thoughts and actions are in complete opposite direction from balance. And that's the thing. You know, one of the things that Greg Braden talked about of the false assumptions, one of it was consciousness being separated from the physical world. Those of you who've been on your spiritual journey that are practicing the mad sciences of truth, you know that your consciousness ultimately is your life. Your consciousness decides and affects what you experience in life, because your consciousness, your awareness, the more you're aware, the more you know, the more you see, the more you recognize your power. We started the show off with Ricky Byers-Beckwith and the song Genesis, In the Beginning, who are you? Who are you? Before you had a name, before you were born, who are you? Before you got the job, the high-paying job, before you were fired, before you lost your house, before you were Democrat or Republican, or whatever you are, the in-between, the left, the right, independent, whatever. Before all of that, beyond your sexual orientation, beyond your religious beliefs, who are you? And how is that adding to this wonderful world that we're creating together? And as I said earlier, we did a show on Monday, The Law of Giving and Receiving, which is about us coming on this planet to deliver our gifts, to give of ourselves, to add, to spend less time judging, criticizing. Even I almost got hijacked in debating something that I really just don't even need to be debating about. If someone believes that human beings are a problem on this earth, they're right, because that's their belief. I don't need to debate that. You know, he or she said there's nothing we can give through death, but there's nothing we can give but death. Okay, you're right. It's not about debate. It's not about competition. It's about standing on what you know to be truth. And whatever you know, whatever you believe, is it working for you? Is what you know to be true, your beliefs, everything that you say, this is the way it is it working for you? Is it moving you towards the goal that you desire? Is it bringing you peace? Is it bringing you joy? Are you able to activate the God consciousness, or is it separating you from your brother, from your sister? And I'm not talking about the extended brothers and sisters. I'm talking about your blood brothers, your family members, because they don't understand you. They're this, they're that. Competition. Well, they're religious, I'm spiritual. How about looking, what can I add? What can I learn from them? We're all in this together. We're all in this together, and everything that is built on the old assumption is crumbling. Let's take a call. We got a Skype number, a long distance, a private number. Yeah, what's your name? It's a, yeah, I don't know if it's a Skype number, but it looks like a Skype number. So if you're calling long distance, or your number is private, or your Skype, well, what's your question or comment? 11111. You are. Okay, go for it.
Hey, this is and goes. You kicked me out the chat.
Nobody kicked you out.
Yes, they did. They kicked me out.
Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to ask the question: how could there be peace? This is what I was saying. How could there be peace if the system that was created by evil, not you, because I don't know you, but evil Europeans that created the system and it collapsed? Okay. How could it be peace if they don't pay for what they did? For the bad karma that they have done to people all over the world. They have killed millions of Native Americans, millions of Africans, millions of Asians, and they're still causing war on people in the Middle East to this day. This is the European Union doing this. So how could it be karma and peace for Europeans with the bad genetic, with the DNA that they carry from what their ancestors did? It's negative karma.
Okay.
How could it be, peace?
Great. That's a very good question. But let me ask you this. How can there be peace? How would you answer that? If a four-year-old came up to you and so go, see, how can there be peace? I'm looking around. I see people separated by colors and sexual orientation, religious. How can there be peace in this world? What would you say to the four-year-old?
To the 40-year-old, there is no peace.
Four-year-old.
This four-year-old, I can only teach that four-year-old how to live the best to its ability. But in the end of the day, when it gets older, it's going to realize this is a war zone. This third-dimensional parallel that we live in is based off war. You eat food to shit it out. You drink water to piss it out. Everything that you do, you get happy to get sad next week. Nothing's permanent. All things are subject to change. The third-dimensional... It's bacteria out here that can wipe you out in less than a second. Germs out here that can kill you. This third-dimensional parallel is a war zone.
Okay, so let me ask
you this. Now, I am aware of consciousness.
Wait. Yeah, hold on. We can get through this. It's okay for us to have different opinions, but we can get through this. The question that I ask you is, if a four-year-old asks you and goes, "Say, how can there be peace? You know, there's so much things I'm seeing people separated. I see family members not getting along. How can there be peace?" What would you say to this four-year-old?
No justice, no peace. There is none. I wouldn't lie to him. I wouldn't give that child first false hope. I couldn't do it.
Let me make sure that I'm following you. Wait. I really want to get to this. So
yes,
you would tell the young person that there is no peace, right? There can't be. Is that what you're saying?
No, I can tell you my reason why.
No. Wait. Let me understand what you're going to tell him first before you tell me the reason. So you're going to tell the four-year-old that there's no peace and there won't be, right? That's what you would tell the four-year-old.
Yes, I will.
Okay, good. Now you can tell me why.
Because everybody knows in this country and all over the world, Europeans and other people raise their children to believe that they're better than most people of darker hue. That's just what it is. When people raise their child, let me just finish. When people raise their child as European, they raise their children to oppress other people. Africans in America make up 13% of this country. It's 40 million of us here. We're not in a race economically. Black people have no manufacturing companies or anything. So everybody knows that even though I don't care who it is, the poorest European thinks that they're better than black people. So what I'm trying to tell my child is I'm going to give him race pride. I'm going to let him or her know who they are. They don't have to hate you, but we have to put ourselves in the game economically to know what's going on. This is a war zone.
What I hear from you is you're saying there is a divide between black and white, Europeans and African Americans or whatever, we're black and white, whatever. How you see the world. How you see the world.
Yes, not consciously, because all of us are connected to that universal consciousness.
Well, regardless,
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that. But I do believe.
Hold on. Wait. Because this is this. I've got you on mute right now, but I really want us to get through this. It's okay to spill out things. I don't agree with you on what you're saying, but what I also believe is when you stand in the place of divide, us and them, you are part of the no peace that you're talking about. Are you willing? This is my question for you. I'm going to unmute the mic again, and if we could do this as grown, mature men, then we'll have this conversation. Are you, Ngozi, willing to be the peace that you would like to see? But clearly you like to see it, but you don't see it right now, or else you won't be fired up. So are you willing, what are you going to do? Are you willing to be the peace? That's the question for you.
No justice, no peace. That's all I got
to
say.
So are you willing to be the peace? Are you willing to be the justice?
Until I see this system collapse and your people pay for what they've done,
are you willing
to
be the justice?
No.
Okay, that's it. Until you are willing to be the justice, there will be no peace. As you put it, we are not separated from the system that we talk about. When you tell a four-year-old, regardless of Europeans and blacks or the Christians and the spiritualists or the Buddhists and the African tradition, whatever it is, when you feel separation consciousness, if that makes any sense, you're adding to the things that pisses you off. So individually, we all have to do this, my brother.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Until you are willing to be the change you want to see, you will forever oppress your own self. You don't need anybody to do that. There we go again with competition.
this sucks. I don't deny that. You know, there's a lot of conversation about the history of this country, the history of the world, as Greg was sharing with us. And this back and forth and separation consciousness, I just go with that. That's what causes the challenge that we're experiencing. And my brother, I can tell you right now, that mindset is dying. So when you say the Europeans do so and so, you're doing the same thing. You become the thing that you're pointing to. So turning it right back, we have to ask ourselves, and if you're still listening, and go see, are you willing? Because you're already clear that no justice, no peace. You got that right. But where's the justice going to come from? You're going to sit back and watch? Come on now. Let's get real. Let's let go of all that old ideas to keep us separated. Because I tell you something, I'm willing to bet this. If you were in a hospital and you need a heart transplant or organ, you need someone to donate an organ to you, you're not going to ask what their race, what their religious belief. You just want to live. That's what I see. That's what I know to be true. And until we all get that we are one. Now, when I say we are one, it doesn't mean don't look at things that are happening. We get so distracted by color, so distracted by sexual orientation, so distracted by religious beliefs. But guess what? All of us are catching hell, if you will. I digress. I'm back. And this is the real work. This is the real deal. This is one of the reasons I created this platform, for us to have conversations like that. It's okay. I'm not mad at my brother for having that perspective, but we have to grow. I know that I don't have all the answers, and I still want to grow. I want to see a different perspective. But wherever you are, I mean, oh, wait a minute. Wait. Just think about this. Now, in America, there's so many us and them. Us and them, their religion, sexual orientation, culture, tradition, race, and all that. But here's the thing. It's not just in America. It's a human disease. The northerners, people from the north, have this general assumption, and I'm generalizing here, that people from the south are illiterate. There's general assumption between Canadians and Americans. There's the Nigerian and the Ghanaians. Nigerian thinks they're better than the Ghanaians. You got the Scottish and the Irish and the English, they go at it. The Pakistanis and the Indians go at it. The Democrats and the Republicans go at it. And in families, we do it to ourselves. We gather together, we talk about our brothers, our siblings. Oh, you know how they are. Oh, there's a black. Oh, you know, they're all stirring up trouble. Until you find the just is and realize it's just us, those of us that are united in spirit, until you find that justice within yourself, you are going to, you just be hooked by the false assumption, this idea of survival of the strongest. And you believe that it's all about competition. And it says, I love that statement. I just got to sit with that. Competition is always destructive. For the conversation we just had, it may be unsettling for some people. But you know, there's some things we really need to look at and really get clear. Life is good. It gets better. You know, it's all different points of view. No judgment, no criticism. I'm sure there's something I have in my consciousness that I'm passionate about. Clearly, I'm passionate about this truth that we're talking about. And I'm always going to go back to we are one. And there are people who are passionate about we are separated. And they're always going to go back to that. But you know, I know there's so much more. And I'm sure they know so much more. Because when we get back to the heart of things, that we're so much more than our stories, that we're so much more than our thoughts, that we're so much more than our differences, that we're so much more than our sexual orientation, the stories, our experiences. We're so much more. This is just a dance. The soul is one. The spirit is one, all connected, one life, one God, one presence, one power. How will you, or what do you have to offer to the emerging worlds?
for those of us who believe in being separate and those of us who believe in coming together. What do you have to offer rather than what I can get? And I appreciate the conversation because sometimes we don't want to talk about that. We don't want to go there because it's just uncomfortable. But conversation is part of the healing. And I'm getting ready to release this show. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh, life is good. It's getting better. I love it. Human beings, we think we have all the answers. And animals are looking at us saying, oh, Jesus, what a waste of energy. The plants, kingdom, the trees are saying, oh, why are they doing all of that? And then humans say, we're the most intelligent creature in the universe. Shut up, human beings. You don't know nothing. You don't know nothing. Yes, you don't know nothing. Because when you know not nothing, you realize that there is that nothing is the all things. Okay, I won't get too deep of myself. Oh, I love you. I bless you. I appreciate you. And I thank God for you. I am full of gratitude right about now. I'm full of gratitude. And we ask that you share the show with your friends, your coworkers, your lovers, your haters, your enemies, because you realize your enemy is just your inner me. And when you learn to love your enemy, you realize, ooh, I'm loving myself. Then you can tell a four-year-old, listen, young man, listen, young lady. Yes, if you don't see peace, your charge on this planet is to be the peace. Then you will see it. Until you become the justice, until you become the peace, you will never see it. And the four-year-old might look at you and say, I got it. Are you willing to be different? Be loved, be true to yourself, and be loved through it all, no matter what. Let's end the show again with, let's go to State of Man. It's time to swallow our fears. What's holding you back from letting go of competition? What's holding you back from cooperating with friends and family members? State of Man, swallow your fears. Their website address is State of Man. Music.com. Tomorrow, Deborah Johnson, we're talking about sacred sexuality. Breathe. It's not that deep. It's really simple. It's really simple. Life is simple. But when you start thinking too hard, you make it complicated. And you get so caught up in your complexity. And you don't know where you started. You don't know what happened. But it's really simple. You can see it through the eyes of children. Swallow your fears. Swallow all the things that are holding you back from living life. I'm out of here, and I can't wait to be back tomorrow.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.